The views and opinions expressed on the following program are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of any organization, including One Generation Away.
The freedom of a people to choose its leaders is the root of liberty.
Keep alive this experiment in liberty.
Liberty, in case you've forgotten, is the soul's right to breathe.
Government should be very minimal in protecting liberty.
Peace cannot be purchased at the cost of liberty.
The sturdy ground of liberty.
Liberty once lost is lost forever.
Fight for their liberty and for our security.
Guarantees individual liberty.
This great republic born alone in liberty.
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 Just how much do you want liberty?
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner,
a production of LibertyNation.com.
Cutting through the double talk, taking on the topics, going after what the politicians really mean, and making it all clear for your freedom and your liberty. Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
The sword of Damocles hangs over the head of Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi, and the D.C. swamp. So where do we go from here? Welcome back into Liberty Nation Radio, a production of LibertyNation.com and heard from coast to coast on the Radio America Network. Nancy Pelosi says there will be no funding for Trump's border wall, while Trump continues to threaten Democrats with declaring a national emergency and doing an end run around Congress. We'll examine the state of play as Trump prepares to deliver his previously postponed State of the Union address on Tuesday. You know, Democrats used to believe and say many of the same things about illegal immigration as Trump. We'll play you what Obama, both Clintons, Chuck Schumer, and Nancy Pelosi used to say about illegal immigration until Trump came along. Senator Cory Booker enters the presidential fray, the ninth Democrat to do so. We'll examine his electoral prospects and we'll drill down on the radical proposals, including Medicare for All, advanced by the putative frontrunner for the Democrat nomination, Kamala Harris. Plus, how the prospect of Starbucks founder Howard Schultz running as an independent has Democrats in open panic. And Scott Cosenza jumps on board for Talkin' Liberty and an analysis of the raid on Roger Stone that closely resembled something out of a police state.
Say what? Say what? Say what? One more time.
We kick things off with our signature segment, Say What, where we roll out some of the most wacky, astonishing, and damnable things uttered by politicians and the chattering class. It's been 1 week since the government reopened after the partial shutdown, and with a deadline for a deal now just 2 weeks away to keep the government open, the only progress President Trump made this week in trying to squeeze money out of the Democrat-run House for his border wall was rescheduling the State of the Union address for this coming Tuesday, when he will surely use the national stage to try and push the envelope on border wall funding. But Speaker Nancy Pelosi said, good luck with that.
There's not going to be any wall money. However, if they have some suggestions about certain localities where technology, some infrastructures, I said, about the ports of entry, we might need more ports of entry. We might need some roads. That's part of the negotiation. What did he say today? It doesn't matter what Congress does. I knew that he wanted it all to himself. I mean, oh, really? A president who wants to have Congress be completely irrelevant in how we meet the needs of the American people? No, come on.
We'll discuss the state of play on negotiations when we're joined in the next segment by Greg Corumbus, news director at Radio America. Another week in another Democratic candidate for president of the United States, the entrance of New Jersey Senator Cory Booker makes it 9 Democrats so far trying to unseat President Trump, and we're still 21 months away from the 2020 election. Just like Senator Kamala Harris, who we'll discuss a bit later on, Booker introduced himself to the American people with high-profile, aggressive questioning during the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. And in his announcement for president, he played heavily on his inner-city background as a community activist and mayor of Newark, New Jersey.
In America, we have a common pain, but what we're lacking is a sense of common purpose.
What's up? Amen.
I grew up knowing that the only way we can make change is when people come together. When I was a baby, my parents tried to move us into a neighborhood with great public schools, but realtors wouldn't sell us a home because of the color of our skin. Together, America, we will rise. I'm Cory Booker, and I'm running for president of the United States of America.
That is an abridged version of his presidential announcement video. Quite well done, actually. Booker will be banking on heavy support from African Americans, while Kamala Harris is also a person of color but is playing heavily towards women. Meanwhile, Democrats are starting to panic about Howard Schultz, the mega-rich founder of Starbucks, who's seriously considering running for president as an independent. They're certain that Schultz would draw votes away from the Democrat nominee and assure a second term for President Trump. Schultz was long thought to be progressive, but on MSNBC, the belly of the progressive beast, he said this week that he cannot abide where the Democratic Party is headed.
I'm not a Democrat. I don't affiliate myself with the Democratic Party, who's so far left, who basically wants the government to take over health care, which we cannot afford, the government to give free college to everybody, and the government to give everyone a job, which basically is $40 trillion on the balance sheet of $21.5 trillion. We can't afford it.
Schultz then got into a Twitter battle with Senator Elizabeth Warren, whose campaign for the presidency appears to be going nowhere, about her proposal to tax the assets, not the income, but the assets of billionaires.
When I see Elizabeth Warren come out with, you know, a ridiculous plan of taxing wealthy people, a surtax of 2%, because it makes a good headline or sends out a tweet, when she knows for in a fact that's not something that's ever going to be passed. This is what's wrong.
Schultz, like Donald Trump, is independent enough and wealthy enough to chart his own course and fund his own campaign. And that's what has leftists in the political and media elites in open panic.
Help elect Trump, you egotistical billionaire.
A lot of Democrats are freaking out.
Absolute gift to Donald Trump.
He could take away votes that would go to the Democratic nominee.
Handing President Trump a second term.
Many Democrats fear that could be disastrous.
Your entry into this race will guarantee Trump another 4 years.
Running as a third party candidate only helps Trump and maybe Putin.
Two words for you, just don't.
Doesn't get to be king just because he's so rich.
Schultz could wind up being the same thorn in the side of Democrats that Ross Perot was to Republicans and President George H.W. Bush back in 1992. Meanwhile, with Democrats long in disbelief that conservative Christians could be so supportive of President Trump, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders did an interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN, this week and turned some heads when she said God wanted Trump to be president.
I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times. And I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there. And I think he has done a tremendous job in supporting a lot of the things that people of faith really care about.
Well, that's it right there. Trump may not be a born-again Christian, but he does a whole lot of things that Christians support. But it should also be said that if you believe God chose Trump, then you have to believe he also chose Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. Then there was the latest hiring by CBS, which, like other elite media, seems to hire only anti-Trump Republicans. This time, it's the never-Trump ex-Senator Jeff Flake, who ran away from a re-election fight and then attacked Trump over and over, and was once thought to be considering a challenge to Trump in 2020.
I've always said that I do hope that there is a Republican who challenges the president in the primary. I still hope that somebody does, but that somebody won't be me. I will not be a candidate.
I'm sure Donald Trump is greatly relieved at that prospect. Will negotiations between Trump and Pelosi go anywhere? Will Trump invoke his power to declare a national emergency? And which of the many Democrats running for president is most likely to break away from the pack? We'll take a quick break, and then we're back to examine the state of play in the D.C. swamp and presidential politics with Radio America News Director Greg Corumbus.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
We believe that all men are entitled to blessings of liberty.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Well, the swamp is churning with what appears to be fruitless negotiations over keeping the government open when the temporary funding bill runs out in a couple of weeks, leading to widespread speculation about whether the president will declare a national emergency as an end run around Congress. While more and more Democrats enter the race to oppose President Trump in 2020. Joining us for an inside perspective on what's going on in the frigid D.C. swamp is Greg Corumbus, news director at Radio America and co-host of the popular conservative podcast Three Martini Lunch. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Tim. Good to be with you again.
Appreciate it. So let me ask you this. What do you think is the minimum that Trump would accept in any deal to keep the government open after February 15th? And what is the maximum the Democrats might be prepared to offer?
Well, the maximum Democrats appear to be ready to offer in terms of wall funding is zero. Nancy Pelosi has made that clear on multiple occasions. It's one of the reasons the shutdown went on as long as it did, because you'll recall that the Democrats were telling Trump, just reopen the government and then we'll negotiate this. And so Trump had him over to the White House the day after that. I think it was the day after his speech, which then we saw the Schumer slash Pelosi rebuttal. And so Trump said, OK, let's say we reopen the government. Are you going to give me any money for the wall? Pelosi says no. Trump says bye. Meeting's over. So Pelosi has said that again this week. She's clearly the one driving the Democratic position on this, because obviously she has the majority in the House and Chuck Schumer can only do so much in the Senate. So that's going to be the Democratic position. And then they're basically daring Trump to call their bluff again. So we're either headed for another shutdown in 2 weeks, or we're going to see the Republicans once again not get what they want. In terms of what Trump would accept, I think he wants at least the $1.6 billion that the Democrats were saying they wanted in general border security money, but probably devoted specifically to the wall, at least that much, if not more than that.
Now, we keep hearing reports that there are Democrats, particularly freshman Democrats, who seem to be more open to making a deal and giving Trump something of what he wants. Are those reports accurate, or are they exaggerated? Do these sort of unnamed Democrats have effectively enough power to force any kind of movement from the Speaker of the House?
I think in certain cases it is legitimate, Tim, but the last question you asked, I think, is the more important one, and that's whether they have the leverage to do it, because the Democrats, as you'll recall, I think needed to pick up 23 seats in the midterms to get the majority. They ended up picking up 40, which means they've got basically a dozen and a half members of their caucus that they can lose without giving up their position on the issue. So if they can't cobble together basically 20 people insisting that we're going to vote for at least some wall funding, Pelosi doesn't have to change her position. So the question is whether there's 20 of those type of people in the House Democratic Caucus. The problem on the other side is not only that there would need to be seven Senate Democrats to get there, and I think there's less of a chance than that than finding 20 in the House, but you've already got Senate Republicans on the record, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, folks that you would have expected to take a stronger stand on this, Mitt Romney, for example, perhaps, saying that they don't have a stomach for a shutdown again. So the Democrats are likely to read that as that the Republicans are not going to stay unified with their 53 votes.
Greg, what indications are you getting on whether Trump is actually prepared to call a national emergency and redirect funding from other sources to his border wall? And how might the seizure at the border of that largest batch of fentanyl ever, enough to kill over 100 million people, change that perspective, if at all?
I expect there to be a big fight over the narrative on that, because on the one hand, you've got the Democrats saying, look, we caught them. The border security is just fine. We can beef it up a little bit here and there with some high-tech equipment and maybe some drones here and there. But you don't need a wall. Everything's working just fine. We just got the biggest fentanyl bust we've ever seen. And Trump will make the argument, of course, is that, well, sure, we caught this one, but it's pouring over the border in huge quantities, not just fentanyl, but heroin and marijuana and everything else. And so we got this one, but there's a lot we're not getting because the border's not as secure as it could be. So there's the narrative fight right there. And good luck getting people to budge, because I think most members on both sides of the aisle are pretty much entrenched. In terms of the national emergency, the fact that Mitch McConnell is pushing back against that means that Trump is probably taking some pause. I'd be curious to see what his attorney general, either his acting or his incoming attorney general, is advising him on this. On the other hand, you've got folks like Lindsey Graham saying, look, if we can't make a deal on this legislatively, let's go ahead and declare the national emergency. The concern with that from a conservative perspective, even if you get started on the wall, is that all of a sudden you've circumvented the legislative process, and eventually one day there'll be a Democratic president with a Republican Congress, and that Democratic president could use this as a precedent for circumventing the Congress on something else, whether it's guns or open borders or something else.
Just like Mitch McConnell used the rule that had been put in force by Harry Reid to push through a couple of Supreme Court nominees that probably would not have passed otherwise. We're joined by Greg Corumbus, Radio America News Director and co-host of the popular conservative podcast, Three Martini Lunch. Let's turn now, Greg, to presidential politics. The name of Cory Booker can now be added to the stampede of Democrats chomping at the bit to take down President Trump. That makes 9 Democrats, I think, officially in, with many more waiting in the wings. Let's talk first about the 2 candidates of color, Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. How do they stack up against each other, do you think, and against the whole field?
Well, based on media reaction, I think Kamala Harris is the one that the media really, really is fascinated with right now. And we'll see who else gets in the race. But she's the one they're enamored with. I haven't seen any other candidate get a primetime solo town hall in Iowa from CNN. So that tells you that they think she is viable in ways that other candidates are not. Cory Booker coming out with a very well-produced video today, taking a little bit of a shot at his current and future Democratic rivals by saying he's the only one that still lives in the inner city, leaving the impression that he's the only one that can really understand it, and therefore leaves him in the best position to address poverty and crime and that sort of thing. He was a mayor, which Kamala Harris was not, but Kamala Harris obviously having a long legal career. The question is which one is going to tack farther to the left, and so far Kamala Harris has done about as much as you can in that direction, essentially calling for an end to private health insurance, taking some pretty strong stances on gun control. And I haven't seen either one of these candidates react to the New York and Virginia abortion bills, but I certainly can't expect Kamala Harris or Cory Booker probably to suggest that those went too far, even though a lot of Democrats are starting to wonder if they did.
Indeed. And on that note, we thank you for joining us today, Mr. Corumbus.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That is Greg Corumbus from Radio America. Stay right there when we return a look back at when the same Democrats who are attacking Trump as a racist because of his tough stand on illegal immigration were saying exactly the same things, plus the radical agenda of Kamala Harris.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Far more important than my political future, and far more important than yours, the well-being of our country.
This is Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
Liberty Nation Radio, a production of LibertyNation.com, and heard from coast to coast on stations big and small along the Radio America network, including the good folks of Andrews, Texas, listening on KACT 1360 AM. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you'll continue to do so and tell your friends. Well, we all know by now what the Democrats think about President Trump and his hard line on illegal immigration and commitment to building a wall on our southern border. But did you know that in years past, long before Donald Trump emerged and won a shocking victory to become president, those same Democrats were singing a very different tune. In fact, the exact same tune as President Trump does these days. We've got statements from Obama, both Clintons, and Chuck Schumer. Let's start with the last president, Barack Obama, when he was a member of the Senate.
We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked, and circumventing the line of people who are waiting patiently, diligently, and lawfully to become immigrants.
The bill before us will certainly do some good. It will authorize some badly needed funding for better fences and better security along our borders, and that should help stem some of the tide of illegal immigration in this country.
Okay, but that's just one prominent Democrat, you might say. But listen to the woman who was supposed to become president in 2016, Hillary Clinton.
Mexican government's policies are pushing migration north. There isn't any sensible approach except to do what we need to do simultaneously, you know, secure our borders with technology, personnel, physical barriers if necessary in some places, and we need to have tougher employer sanctions, and we need to try to incentivize Mexico to do more. If they've committed transgressions of whatever kind, they should be obviously deported.
You know, if you saw that statement in writing and had to guess who said it, you'd guess Donald Trump, right? But how about Hillary's husband, Bill, the 42nd president?
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more, by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws.
Okay, you might say, but Obama and both Clintons are no longer in office. So what about one of Trump's chief tormentors in the current fight, Chuck Schumer? Just listen to Schumer a few years ago.
We must create a system that converts the current flow of primarily low-skilled illegal immigrants into the United States into a more manageable and controlled flow of legal immigrants who can be absorbed by our economy. Illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration. People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally.
That is exactly what Trump has been saying. But because it's Trump, Democrats have completely changed their minds. Just thought you should hear the hypocrisy for yourself. Now, Kamala Harris, the hottest Democrat in the race for president at this point, has come out in support of some truly radical proposals. Foremost among them, a single-payer government health care system that would terminate all private health insurance.
I am running to declare once and for all that health care is a fundamental right. And we will deliver that right with Medicare for all.
So how would the nation's health care system change with Medicare for all? Well, everything would change. At least 160 million Americans would be moved from private insurance to a government-run program. Medicare for All would cost taxpayers over $30 trillion in the next 10 years. That's $3 trillion a year in a federal budget that now totals about $4 trillion a year. Doctors and hospitals would experience huge losses, with the program being funded on the backs of healthcare providers who would take a 40% haircut, a 40% reduction in their reimbursements on top of the cutbacks and chaos already created for doctors by the failed Obamacare system. But that's not the only thing proposed by Kamala Harris that would strain, to put it mildly, the federal budget.
I am running to declare education is a fundamental right. And we will guarantee that right with universal pre-K and debt-free college.
Well, as someone once said, if you think government programs are expensive now, just wait till they make them free. But Kamala Harris also threw out a more predictable bromide from the left. Soak the rich.
I am running to guarantee working and middle class families an overdue pay increase. We will deliver the largest working and middle class tax cut in a generation. Up to $500 a month to help America's families make ends meet. And we'll pay for it. We'll pay for it by reversing this administration's giveaways to the top big corporations and the top 1%.
Mm-hmm. So Kamala Harris seems to be setting the pace for the many Democrats already in the race and those waiting in the wings. But one thing's for sure, the Democrat agenda for 2020 makes Barack Obama look like a Republican. Quick break, and then we're back to discuss the raid on Roger Stone ordered up by the special counsel on Talkin' Liberty.
Liberty Nation with Tim Donner.
And now it is time for the portion of Liberty Nation Radio, which we entitle Talkin' Liberty, a natural segment for a show on Liberty. It's when we examine threats and promising developments regarding your individual liberty with our regular contributor, constitutional lawyer and LibertyNation.com legal affairs editor, Scott Cosenza. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Tim.
I'm so glad the temperature is up to about 8 degrees now.
We have to change everything about our lives in order to combat the threat of global warming, Tim. That's the important takeaway.
Actually, the best part of this is that we're actually hearing from various climate change alarmists that, well, this is exactly what you're supposed
That's
to
right.
accept. Because, you know why? Because it's hot in Australia. So you're getting extreme heat in Australia and record-breaking century-high cold in the U.S.
Century low cold, right.
Well, you century know, whatever.
The argument I heard about this, and I think I can't claim credit for myself. I don't know who made it, but they said, I would be more apt to believe this global climate change contributes to both of these things if there was anything approximating a reasonable prediction about this weather event, right? So that would indicate they had some real sense of where the climate was heading. But instead, you just get this as a postscript, right? Where's the prediction ahead of time?
Al Gore's increasingly looking like a climate change moderate.
He's going to be a climate change billionaire in a few months, Tim. I mean,
you mean he's not there already?
Well, maybe he is.
Well, he has to pay a lot of that to Tipper, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, we digress massively here. There was a documentary one time a few years ago called Get Me Roger Stone.
Thoroughly entertaining.
So apparently Robert Mueller and his henchmen saw that.
Right.
I can imagine Mueller saying to Andrew Weissman, his top henchman, his lieutenant, get me Roger Stone. And they sure did, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, Tim. That's an interesting lead-in that you chose to the story, because one of the most profoundly disturbing aspects of it is the CNN scoop, and what many people, myself included, to believe to be the CNN tip-off, which is to say that Roger Stone's house was raided at about 5:50 a.m., I believe, and the only group that was there to cover it live journalistically was CNN, and we believe it was a tip that counsel's office or the U.S. attorneys or the prosecutor. But here's the reason why I say I think it was interesting at your lead-in. The producer for the CNN segment that of the Roger Stone raid is a former FBI employee, according to Roger Stone himself. And so the idea that that person, I mean, it just, you know, who are you going to believe? Your own lying eyes or the truth?
You mean
right?
They don't stake out his house round the clock the time? I mean, they have big staff.
And the other thing, apparently, there were police at either end of the block, and apparently, like, you or I couldn't have gotten onto that block. So it was sort of doubly in favor of CNN. And, of course, violative of the secret grand jury process and, you know, numerous other confidentiality rules. Again, all to accrue to the political damaging of President Trump. And so that is what is so profoundly disturbing. We have elements of the government, whether they're Mueller himself or his lieutenants or others high in the FBI or the U.S. Attorney's Office, who are using that office that we pay handsomely for in order to punish Donald Trump politically.
And there's there seems to be nothing anybody can do to stop them except for Trump firing Robert Mueller.
That's certainly one of the ways. Lindsey Graham did, Tim, issue a series of tweets. It's so funny how we talk about politics these days, but he tweeted out the contents of a letter that he sent to the FBI asking for a specific responses to questions about why the decision was made to send a helicopter, a SWAT team, and a pre-dawn raid over a person who was represented by counsel and had no history of violence nor inclination to it. So hopefully we'll get some answers at some point in the future.
Well, all these crimes that he's charged with occurred after the Mueller investigation started. They're all process crimes. They're not violent crimes. And yet the SWAT that was pulled off by the police by most counts, more than two dozen law enforcement officers, including amphibious.
Well, certainly you have to
for the
aquatic
for the water behind his house, for the pond or the lake or whatever behind his house. But this, I mean, this was a guy who's supposedly or is charged with process crimes, and yet the SWAT team that went in there, Scott, it was almost indistinguishable from what you'd see in Venezuela.
This is so. There's two things going on. One of them is this punish Donald Trump and his allies thing that I think is clearly on display. And Roger Stone, in particular, has a history of kind of thumbing his nose at establishment. And so even more so than any other sort of random supporter of the president, I think that perhaps the other side would be rife to kind of thumb their nose back at him with a raid that he claims they spent, I think he said, 13 hours in his house. They didn't leave until 7 p.m., and they set up tables and inspected and searched everything in the house during that time.
As if he was dealing drugs or something.
And wouldn't let his wife, for instance, access her electronic devices that we're all sort of married to. You think about what it would be like. You got somebody in your house. You're subject to a search warrant. You can't move. You can't leave. And you can't access your electronic device. It's 13 hours. What's that day like for you?
Well, it's sending a clear signal that they're, you know, they're going to use every ounce of intimidation available to essentially, Scott, a fourth branch of government, because this is proof positive that there are no limitations placed on what this special counsel can do.
I agree. And so there is one other factor that can sort of go in the defense of the FBI in this instance. And it's a factor that we've talked about before, Tim, and it goes against the liberty of all Americans, which is that these militarization of law enforcement, including federal law enforcement, takes place every day in America, across the country. And these sorts of militarized style raids are now, I don't know if I'm trying to use the right word here. It's not necessarily an everyday thing for every department, but it's very, very common that for nonviolent people, they will use these warrant squads. They get a lot of press. They get a lot of attention. They're sexy. You know, they're sort of by the way, the people who are, you know, recruited to go on them, it's all gung-ho. I remember an old school sheriff once said, you should ask who wants to be on the SWAT team, and whoever holds up their hand, they should not be allowed the SWAT team.
Right.
But unfortunately, all the hand raisers, they're on the teams these days, and many Americans have to suffer a fate similar to Roger Stone, albeit for different motivations.
I was walking around with the sound off on the TV when this Roger Stone SWAT team arrest happened, and I looked at it, Scott, literally, and I said, oh, maybe they're going in after the Venezuelan president,
really,
Maduro.
Wow.
I really thought it was Venezuela. Yeah. Because you're talking about going in, guns a-blazing, a helicopter, automatic weapons, amphibious units behind the house.
Right.
I mean, imagine what they would have done if this guy had committed a real crime.
Mm-hmm. Now, leftists are busy celebrating Roger Stone's raid and celebrating Maduro's continued presence in office there.
All right, we got time for one more story. We can either do Canada DUI or we can do the Baltimore DA.
Let's stick with Baltimore. Keep it local. In Baltimore, Tim, the district attorney, Marilyn Mosby, has said that she will no longer prosecute marijuana crimes. I think this is a huge deal. So many of, it's sort of in the air, this sort of the policing that poor brown people get basically in a daily, and where the rubber meets the road for so much of that is drug prohibition and marijuana prohibition specifically. So I think it's a great thing that these people will no longer have to have significant parts of, sort of damage to their lives because they want to use cannabis. Now, it's not all sunshines and smiles. The police have not signed on to this. So Ms. Mosby is a elected representative, and she's responding to her, what she thinks is the benefit of the constituency. But the police don't work for her. They work for the mayor. And the police have not said they will. So what likely happened, Tim, is, don't go to Baltimore and think you can walk down the street and not get arrested for marijuana. You can. But you will not be prosecuted unless you have demonstrable evidence that you're dealing, which is to say baggies and scales and that sort of thing. For personal use in Baltimore, though, you may get arrested, but you will no longer be prosecuted for marijuana.
But part of the Baltimore DA's announcement here is that she's going to try to vacate 5,000 convictions. So it's going to be retroactive.
It may be.
She's trying to do.
Yes. So as I understand it, and I have a limited understanding of Maryland post-conviction relief, to be sure, is that it's an uphill battle for that to happen. But it was not an uphill battle for her to stop, effective immediately, any current and future prosecution. So you can bank on that for the time being anyway. The 5,000 in the past, we don't know.
30 seconds on Canada DUI.
Canada passed a law that's just now sort of coming into the enforcement mechanisms are just now being populated, and we're now just sort of hearing about it. Tim, the DUI law in Canada was changed to where this year police have to have no cause at all to stop you and demand that you submit to a sobriety test. The story I learned about was a man going to a recycling center with some empty beer bottles, and the cop said, you must be a big drinker. Let me test you for your sobriety with no cause. So I talked to a Canadian citizen today about this law and asked how it might be overturned, knowing little about the governance of our country, of our neighbor to the north, like so many Americans. He said it's probably going to take a year more if it does get overturned for this law to go away.
I thought the amazing part is that it requires drivers to be sober for 2 hours after they finish
driving,
so they can follow you into your home.
That's right.
If they saw that you were driving but they didn't stop you.
Or somebody else calls and says you were driving erratically. So you're on your way home from work. Somebody calls and says you were driving erratically. You get in the door and you have a couple scotches on an empty stomach. Now you have to blow a breathalyzer test.
This is definitely more of a threat than a promising development
for
individual liberty. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Tim.
This program, Liberty Nation Radio and LibertyNation.com's own podcast, The Uprising, are available to you on demand at LibertyNation.com and from fine podcast providers everywhere. So that is it for this week, but we'll be back at you next week, same time, same station. Till then, this is Tim Donner saying stand up for liberty. And we'll see you next time on Liberty Nation Radio.